Joining me now, Matthew Gallagher, CEO and founder of Watch Gang.
Hello.
Such a fun name. I love it. Thanks
Gallagher
for being here.
Or Watch Gang?
Watch Gang.
Oh, okay.
Gallagher's good too, though.
All right, I agree.
Solid last name.
Thanks.
So what is Watch Gang and how did it come about?
Watch Gang is a Watch of the Month club. So it's like a lot of subscription-based companies where we ship a mystery product to customers. We call them members, our members every month. And they're guaranteed to be worth more than what the members are paying for their membership. It came about a year ago. I started this in September of 2016. It's kind of a sad story. My dad passed away last year, left me a watch. It was really the only thing that he had of any value. And, you know, even today, for me, it's the most special thing that I have. And a few months after he passed, I had the inspiration to start a company based around that, which is watches. And so we give away a Rolex every Friday. And my dad, he left me a 1953 Rolex. It was a birth year watch for him. And we started off just giving one away every month. And as we grew, I always maintained that I wanted to kind of keep the giveaway aspect of the company going. And we brought that to once every Friday.
What a touching story.
Thanks.
From a professional standpoint, what is your work history and what led you to want to actually be an entrepreneur?
I think that, so my background's in software engineering, and then I worked in advertising for a few years, and that sort of lends itself to being able to kind of spin up businesses and test things, and I'm kind of a data junkie. I think that I really just love kind of being in control of my own destiny. I'm sure you probably hear that all the time by entrepreneurs, but in my case, it's very true.
Yeah. So the hardest part, often leaving the 9-to-5, mm-hmm. going out, venturing on your own. What was that transition like for you and any lessons learned that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, it was extremely scary. Most of the businesses that I had kind of dabbled in, I'd always done as a side project. You know, I had the reliability of a 9-to-5 job. And if something went awry or I didn't want to work on it anymore, that was okay. You know, I always had my job to fall back on. So when I finally kind of pulled the trigger on leaving the corporate world to do my own thing, I already had a family. I had kids. And the scariest part about that was that maybe I would fail and I wouldn't have a backup anymore. But in hindsight, that's really what I think got me to move forward so quickly and you know, just work so hard at it.
So it ultimately ended up being a motivator.
Absolutely.
For you, that fear.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
If you could go back in time to those beginning months, which weren't too long ago for you as an entrepreneur, what advice would you give yourself?
Trust people, right? So one of the biggest hurdles that I had to overcome was giving people that I put in a position to work for me, giving them the full authority and trust to do what I was doing. Because I did everything myself when I started, because I wanted to know that I was doing what was best and what I really, you know, it was in my vision. And I think that I could have let go a little earlier, because it's only recently that I started really giving people the ability to do kind of the work that's in their full scope and giving myself a break and kind of having a more balanced life outside of just working every hour of every day.
I think that's one of the hardest parts for entrepreneurs is delegating and trusting and letting go and really empowering their employees to do a good job. But of course, for you, you know, your business is your baby. And so you want to not only have a hand in it, but of course, no one initially can do anything as good as you do. So how did you overcome that of being like, okay, I might be the best person to do it, but at the same time, I really need to trust and let go and empower my employees?
I had to do it. To grow, there wasn't enough time in a day for me to do everything anymore. And I was faced with, you know, either I could keep it at a level where I could manage everything and be miserable and work every hour of my life away, or I could let it grow into what I think it's really capable of and equip my friends and my coworkers into doing those things.
If you made a startup toolkit, what would be inside of it?
$100,000. I think that...
I think a lot of people would be like, sign me up for that toolkit.
I think that overall, I think that question is about what gives you the ability to be an entrepreneur. And I think a big part of that, I would recommend that any entrepreneur learns how to code. I think that's huge. it's not necessary, but eventually in your business, you're going to come to, a crossroad where you have to either hire a tech co-founder, or you already have one, or you have to hire web developers or software engineers. And it helps so much if you already know how to do that kind of stuff. So I would recommend that, number one. And then to trust people, to hire people that you really love and that you trust, and to create a culture around your kind of vision of the company.
So it sounds like you know how to code.
I do.
Do you use that skill set often?
Not anymore. I mean, I used to yeah. do it every day. And now it's sort of, I don't even
helps
do it as a
hobby. Helps you manage, delegate a little bit better, maybe?
It definitely helps that. And it makes sure that you aren't taken to the cleaners, I guess, when you get a quote from
and
a coder.
And you know what? I hear a lot of bad stories about that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's just good to kind of know that
Absolutely.
Sector of your business.
Yeah.
Have you ever hired family or friends, and would you recommend it?
We have 15 employees now, and I think 12 of them are friends of mine. So yes, I recommend it as long as you're able to separate the friendship and the business, and as long as you're confident in being able to lead and really empower your friends to do what's within their ability. And you know what? I think that when you start hiring people outside of that, as long as the culture stays strong, then it's great. I wouldn't change anything about my process, but not everybody has great friends like me.
How do you maintain that professional, personal boundary and balance?
We just don't hire HR, and then it's good. We just do whatever
then
we want.
Then it doesn't matter. Yeah. There is no distinction.
Yeah, no. I think that, you know, I hire people that are intelligent, and they understand that there's a difference, and that there are things that we can do inside and outside of work.
And they're professional.
Exactly.
They've got good etiquette.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you are making a tough decision, do you usually go with research, your gut, a combination?
It's a combination. Definitely a mix based on the situation and you know, how strong my gut is telling me to do something. Mm-hmm.
Would you rather hire someone who has an MBA, a strong intuition, or really strong sense of street smarts?
I think that intuition and aptitude is my number one. When I'm looking at people's resumes, I don't have a degree, so it would be very hypocritical of me to say I only hire people with degrees. I think that, I look at their intuition, their aptitude, and just personality.
Is there a particular mentor that comes to mind that's really inspired you?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was 17 or 18, I was hired to work in technology at this insurance company. I was doing customer service. And the boss that hired me, his name is John, he's been my mentor for years. And I think overall, it's his ambition and his work ethic that really inspired me. It's not necessarily a single thing that he said, but just sort of that lead by example type of thing.
What did you learn specifically about his ambition and work ethic that you really incorporate into your work life?
He was laser focused on something when he wanted to do it, and he didn't let anything get in the way of that. Even having a job, he carved out enough time for his family and for his ambition projects, his passion projects, to really inspire me to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's hard to have that balance. What does a typical week look like for you? And do you work weekends? Is there that personal professional separation at all?
I used to work all the time. That's all I did. And I was lucky enough to have a wife and kids support me through that. And it's, like I said, just recently that I've been able to step away a little and have a more balanced life. And I think just for my mental health, that's necessary. So I try not to work on the weekends. I try not to work after I get home. I try to just plug my phone in to a charger and walk away from it and spend the rest of the night with my wife and kids.
What hours do you typically work?
Well, I usually get up around 7. I kind of help out in the morning as I wake up, and then I'll check in. I'll work for maybe 30 minutes or so, head into the office around 9, leave around 4 or 5, and I try not to work anymore. I used to just be non, like, it's every hour of my waking day was working.
Yeah. So what would you say that you do for fun?
I really like to work my hands. I like to work with leather. So I do leather working, just like sewing and cutting and dyeing leather. And I box.
Very cool. Yeah. And then you spend time with your family, of course, as well.
Yeah.
So that, nice, well-rounded.
Exactly.
That's a given.
Yes.
Nice, well-rounded week for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about building your business. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Sometimes it's okay to be boring. Just kidding. No, it's not. This is Owen Claff with Pitch Anything, showing you how to close like the pros. What's missing from most presentations that I see? It's surprise, novelty, and humor. Surprise is more about the setup than the delivery. Because, you see, attention is hard to capture and even harder to hold. It's natural for our audience's attention to drift away, but there's a sequence leading to a surprise that can get it back. Here's how it works. Start the sequence by being boring on purpose and keep it short. Then immediately contrast the boring information you've given with new novel information. Doing it this way gives your audience something interesting to think about. It stimulates thought and regains their attention immediately. This is Everything Entrepreneur. I'm Owen Claff with Pitch Anything.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a...
The biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I am continuing my conversation with the CEO and founder of Watch Gang. Now, you already mentioned the inspiration behind the business, but where did you see the opportunity? At what point did you go, this is the business model I want, and I really think there's going to be a demand for it?
So I'm a big fan of subscription-based companies, and I think that the idea of having like loyal members in my business meant if I could retain them, it means I'm truly providing a service and it's something to make them happy. And so when I had the idea for watches, my first step was looking into like the places where I would advertise and see, can I target enough people to even make this a viable business? And that was my step one. And I could. There were millions of people that are interested in watches that also take part in subscription services like a Netflix or anything else. And so that was kind of step one for me. After I built the site, I was getting sales before ever advertising. And that was step two. That was like, oh, this is a real thing. People will buy this. Go get watches. So
cool. Yeah. Cool. So I know you secured some seed funding mm-hmm. early on. Tell me about that story and just kind of what your process has been for having the capital to start the business.
Sure. So really close friend of mine, guy I've worked with for a lot of years, on and off. I told him about the business after the first month. I had a couple hundred members, and I saw the potential, and I just reached out and I said, hey, you know, I have this thing. I think it's really special. And if you want to be part of it, I need some money to grow it. And because I knew that I would have a lot of competitors pop up after I started advertising. And so, he invested, gave me some seed money to market and buy some inventory, do some partnerships with watch companies. And really, he was investing in me because having 200 members, it's something. It's good to start with, but you know that doesn't really prove a business model out yet. And I think that he just trusted my intuition. And so, yeah, we used that. That was the only funding that we had, and we grew. We're a year old now, and so we've grown to almost 18,000 members.
Would you consider him your only business partner, or do you have others?
He's sort of hands off. He helps me a little bit on the advertising side, but I've just kind of surrounded myself by people that I trust and people.
Your team.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned that you were one of the first, if not the first, in this space for male watches and the subscription model.
I think there were two other Watch of the Month clubs. And what I did and what I really believe in is if there's something that you want to do business-wise, do it and make it better than your competitors, right? Just you can do that all day and you're going to make successful businesses. So I looked at what they were doing wrong, and I fixed it and I did something better. And I'll just give an example. So
yeah, please speak to how you really differentiate.
Sure.
That's obviously a big challenge for businesses, is to be competitive.
So the other watch clubs were basically just going online and buying watches that were $10 or cheap watches, and they were selling them for a profit. They were just looking at this as a short-term thing. They wanted to make immediate money. And so when people received their watches that they paid $30 for, they would Google them and they see that they could have just bought the watch for 15 or 20 bucks. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't feel good. So it was after that I put a guarantee in place. I guarantee that when you buy a watch or you buy a membership from me, the watch we send you is always worth more than what you're paying. And we do that by aligning ourselves with really awesome watch companies. So we've partnered with Seiko and Citizen and really large companies that they're giving us discounts because of how big our member base is, and they get advertising benefit from it. Their watches are going in the hands of watch lovers. And so we're able to secure that, give them out to our members at a discount, and they're always worth more.
That's great.
Yeah.
How many employees do you guys have?
15.
Okay, so what are you looking for? I know that you mentioned that a lot of the times they're friends, mm-hmm. so you already know that you trust them. What else are you looking for in an employee?
Well, I've capped out my friend pool.
So, no more friends,
yep,
only
no more,
strangers.
No more friends. When I'm looking to bring somebody on, I think that what I look for first is a personality. Will this person fit in with my family, really? Will they fit in with my family and with the team that I've built?
You're spending a lot of time with them, and they're helping you grow your baby, your business.
I spend more time with my coworkers than I do my own family.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
waking
hours. So I first look at that, and then I look at, like, how, you know, what's the intuition? What's the aptitude of the person? Because I truly believe that the right person, you can put them in almost any position, and they'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I look for that. And obviously work experience and history is crucial for certain roles. But those are the top two things that I look at.
Is work culture important to you? And if so, how would you describe yours?
It's so important. And let's see, how would I describe mine? I said it's kind of like a family, and it is. But everybody probably says this about theirs. We're fun. Like I let everybody leave early on Fridays. We buy like lunch and breakfast on Fridays, and I don't know, we have like dartboards and stuff. It's kind of like typical startup like feeling.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I think it's just there's a real respect and love for each other in my company. Everybody just, they vibe well together.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
What has been the biggest challenge so far?
Well, it used to be finding enough watches every month. I was discovering that as we were growing, it was increasingly difficult, more difficult to find companies that had enough watches ready for us to ship. And so that's why I expanded my operations team. And I have a team of people that just do that for me now. But yeah, that was probably the biggest, biggest hurdle.
And what would be the biggest success so far?
You know what? Last month, well, I guess it was this month. So when Hurricane Harvey hit Texas, I was absolutely floored at the response that our members had about that. So we sent out an email and we offered people to just be able to buy like watches from us that were going to support the hurricane victims. And we raised like $50,000 in a few days. And that was just for our members that wanted to support their fellow members in Houston area. And when that happened, it was so like eye-opening for me that, yes, it's a watch of the month club. We're not changing the world, but that's real life. And that like they were willing to come together, and that means that they really feel something for their fellow members. And it means that that culture—
You're building a community,
yes.
And a community that's very caring.
Yeah.
And you may not be changing the entire world, but you're certainly doing your part to make a positive impact.
Yeah, yeah.
How
that
cool.
I feel like our company culture trickled down into our members, and that's awesome.
That is awesome. So how do you measure success? Is it through customer satisfaction, through hitting your revenue goals, maybe something else?
I think that obviously revenue goals are important because, you know, we have to keep the lights on. But at the end of the day, if my members aren't happy, I don't sleep well. I used to look through every single one, but I look through satisfaction surveys. I look through support tickets and the feedback that we get. And I make changes directly based on even one person's feedback if I think that it's going to help the company.
That can be difficult, though, sometimes. I mean, obviously, it's incredibly helpful because you get that instant feedback.
Yeah.
But it's challenging when you see people talking negatively.
Yeah. And what I had to realize is that that's going to happen in every company.
Yeah.
You could be giving away a Rolex to every member every month, and eventually somebody will not like it.
If you weren't in your current job, which one would you want to be in? Just as a fun curveball question.
I would be coding. I like creating things, whether it's like with my hands or whatever. I would be programming and making projects.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank
Thanks.
You so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Right now, our guests joining us are Brian D. Evans and Clinton Senko. You guys are founder and CEO of Influensive and co-founder and COO of Influensive. Give us a quick recap. What's your guys' company do?
Influensive is an online publication. It's different than most. We're not out there. We are providing how-to information for entrepreneurs, but it's inspiration too. So we're unconventional wisdom. We have a lot of influential writers and contributors from a lot of different platforms. And we're looking to inspire people, kind of like what you guys are doing. We're here to inspire people and give them some takeaways they can use and go create businesses and a better life.
Where do you guys see the vision for this headed? Because that's something that, you know, I'm always curious to know. When somebody has a business, in this case yours, is this an exit strategy where we're trying to build this thing up so once it's doing X amount of money, we know that we can get it valued at this and sell it? What's the vision?
I want to reach 80 million readers a month. And it was one of those moments.
So like, I think the daily? I'm trying to think of.
Elite Daily
had 30 million visitors a month and got purchased for 50 million?
I think they're actually
at 50 million.
It was between 50 to 80 where they sold for 50 million.
Gerard.
Okay, so 50 to 80 million views a month to get acquired for 50 million. Do you guys know what their profitability model was? Like, were they doing $250,000 a month, $100,000 a month?
The numbers on that, I'm not sure their exact revenue on that. They probably would have been doing well over $10 CPM on that. So.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Millions. So that's the goal for you guys, is something similar to that?
I don't know. I mean, if a big enough number came along, it would be really hard to refuse a sale, I think, down the road.
Because then you get to go shift into all the other fun projects,
As an entrepreneur, it's like,
you're flooded with ideas.
Opportunities. Couldn't do the same thing for the rest of my life anyways if I tried, so.
Yeah.
I think if the number was big enough, it'd sell. But the goal now is to build up the readership. And
so, how are you guys trying to do that? Because I mean, many people nowadays are doing vlogs and trying to build their personal brand and their websites and trying to get the traffic and their podcasts. So there's so many people. I mean, the fastest growing industry, as we know, is the coaching space.
Yeah.
People trying to become an expert and everyone trying to sell. We're in this space.
You guys have
interviewed hundreds of people like that. And so it's like, there's a lot of people in this industry, but what do you guys feel like is going to help you get to that level from where you're at now, which is crushing it, to like ultra crushing it, where you're going to get bought for 50 million or 100 million?
Well, I'll let Clinton answer this too, but I love competitive industries. I know there's a big pie out there and I can take a piece of it. And it's, and that piece is a big piece.
Right.
So I love competitive industries.
Yep.
We're very, it's been a 15-year overnight success. We've been doing social media for, doing it for 15 years now. Yep. You know, I'm learning that I know those algorithms, how they work, those viral trends. I know how to tap into that stuff. We're very aggressive marketers. We're using a lot of aggressive tactics. I think a lot of our competition is in traditional tactics, where we have a difference in the knowledge of how that stuff intricately works.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff we're doing with contributors and writers, I think, is big as well.
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, we want to build, you know, Influensive, you know, into a platform that, you know, teaches, trains, and inspires the next generation of leaders. You know, and as it stands right now, we definitely are focused, obviously, around entrepreneurship and businesses and giving, you know, people tips to, you know, start that side hustle. You know, start a new business, you know, how to build their personal brand. Because one of the things that I honestly love the most about what we do is, you know, giving an opportunity to a contributor to really build their personal brand. Because as you know, as we all know, we write for different platforms, we've been interviewed. You know, there's a lot of good things that can come from, you know, getting your name attached, you know, to a well-known brand. But definitely, you know, with Influensive, we definitely, you know, want to take it, you know, from content to videos and so on, to really, you know, try and touch as many different areas of content as we can. Because as you already mentioned, you know, there's everything from daily vlogs to, you know, live sessions to
YouTube channels, podcasts.
Exactly. There's so many different types of content that, you know, we definitely want to be that source that our audience and our users come to every day, you know, when they're feeling down in their venture. And, you know, it's as entrepreneurs, we all have our down days.
Yeah. You know, like he said, the daily, you know, diet. It's like you condition yourself with breakfast, lunch, and dinner and healthy snacks.
Do that
and
on
you
social
do the same
media,
thing.
Website.
With, so when I think, you know, where am I going to get a short little snack of just like, hey, I got some downtime to kill between a meeting or between, you know, whatever, a
what
break.
What do you consume?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to just sit down and I'm going to, in my lunch break, I'm going to go to Influensive.
Got five
I'm gonna,
minutes.
I'm
gonna
find some quick little information.
Right.
And so you guys are trying to become like the staple that's just known as that's where I go for that.
Right.
And it's an assortment of content too, an assortment of you can consume something for 5 minutes or 2 hours. So it's creating that, I think, is important, of having that balanced diet of content.
Founder and CEO of Influensive and co-founder and COO, we got Brian D. Evans and Clinton Senko are joining us right now. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. You two guys are absolute rock stars. Is there anything that you definitely want to touch on and talk about? Otherwise, I'm going to keep firing questions off.
Fire away.
Is there something? All right. So content. You guys have a massive content platform. And I feel like, you know, we've talked about so many things. A lot of it has to do with content, whether it's creating content, whether it's facilitating content and finding people who are going to provide the content for your platform. So when it comes to content, I feel like some people don't really have a clear idea of how to create the right content. And so do you guys have sort of a framework that in order for somebody to submit great content, it has to fit into a certain thing? Or when you guys create content, there's a specific checklist you follow?
And this will actually serve everything here, but imagine you're being interviewed on Business Rockstars and you have to explain it very quickly. So think about your content like that. If you have a piece of content that you're writing and you're kind of like, I don't know if this really makes sense, ask yourself, go to somebody else and say, hey, can I just pitch this to you? Don't read it. Just explain the concept. And if you can explain the concept in like 30, 60 seconds, boom, you've got it.
Okay.
So that's one of the techniques that I use personally if I'm writing something.
Something that I learned, just a simple one, is short, contextual, relatable, actionable.
Absolutely.
So contextual meaning it's you know, contextual, there's a context, like creating content for marketers, creating content for blogs, creating content for videos. So there's the context, and then, you know, relatable is it has to relate specifically to that individual. Mm-hmm. And then actionable is like, here's three things, seven things, which is why so many articles are like the seven tips, the 12 steps, you know, things like that.
Well, headline psychology too is also a big factor. So
you need to have a good headline.
You must know from the analytics on your site, like which articles take off.
Yeah.
And
if
you just change the headline, how much it goes up or down.
Yeah, famous names, numbers, big dollar amounts, percentages.
The trends happening.
Yeah, trends happening. You can tap into trending content. Yeah. Intrigue factor, too. You don't want to give it away in the headline. If I give it away, you're not going to read the article.
Mystery causes action is a great saying to remember.
Yes, yes.
So always try to put curiosity and elicit, oh, I'm curious. Yeah. What does that mean? And so I'm trying to remember what some of the best websites are that have like the shortest little headlines. But if you ever look at like the ads on the side, those people are paying money for those.
Of course.
So either A, it's their first time and they have no idea, and you can usually tell pretty quick.
Yeah.
Or B, they're professional marketers, and so the headlines that you see you're being targeted by are probably pretty good headlines to at least come up with an idea of.
Yeah.
Or go to, you know, your guys' website and look at the headlines of the articles, because you guys are professionals who make sure your headlines are, you know, what they should be.
Yeah, headlines are super important, you know, to build on that with Brian. And just to even kind of take that another step forward, just kind of maybe even a tip, you know, for, you know, contributors that are out there, or, you know, someone maybe that wants to aspire to be a contributor. One thing that I would really, you know, suggest is get it in your head kind of early is that I need to provide value, you know, to the readers.
It's not self-serving.
And I need to provide value, you know, to the publication as a whole. Because I think when you have that in your mind that, you know, I want to provide value to them, whether that's interacting with them, whether that's writing a well-thought-out article that, you know, gives them five steps that they can implement right now, you really need to think, I need to provide value, 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 and it's going to come back to you tenfold if you focus on value.
And that's like the perfect thing, because it not only relates to networking, doing business, creating content, being interviewed. Yeah. It's literally, if you start to focus on who you are as an individual, as a value adder, and you go out to acquire new knowledge and skill sets to improve your ability to add more value, your value adding ability is typically in direct proportion to your earning ability.
Absolutely.
And so keep going out, getting new knowledge and skill sets, sharpening your knowledge and skill sets so you can add more value and make more money and have a bigger impact in the world. So I love that you brought that up. What do you feel like is some good advice for the aspiring entrepreneur who's sitting there in a position where you guys once were, who says, I've got a 9-to-5 job. I think that you two are amazing. I want to go out and I want to follow my own passion and create my own business. Just short and sweet. You share one piece of advice and you share one piece of advice. What do we tell this aspiring entrepreneur? When's the right time to get started?
Go for it.
Okay, I'll say number one is be a content creator. So whether that's you decide to start writing, whether that means you start doing videos, whether that means you start going, you know, to interview people, you know, at live events, you just need to become a content creator. Quotes, pictures, whatever you're good at, find something that you have a passion for and just create content, because no one's going to find you. No one's going to know what you're all about unless you create content and put it out there. So just create content.
Simple, I love it.
And one of my favorite quotes, life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. So if you look at a failure or something setback, or you were dealt this bad hand, I don't like that mindset. I like the mindset of these things are happening to strengthen me for next time. It's happening for me to show me the right path. So I think the mindset shift, that big mindset shift in me when I heard that, and adopted that, was huge to me. It was all these little failures. It's all for a reason. It's not that I should be down on myself, because if you're down on yourself and you lose confidence, that's it. You need to stay confident and realize, okay, that failure, that's good. I'm happy because that didn't work. Now I can try other things that could work.
What a great reframe. You know, things aren't happening to me, they're happening for me. And just that little shift in frame. Love you guys. You guys are rock stars. Appreciate you guys for coming on the show. Where can people learn more about you?
Influensive.com.
Influensive.com. Easy as that.
You betcha.
Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
You bet. Thank you so much for having us.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. Why would you do it yourself when you can call a pro? I'm Pat O'Brien, and this is a Business Rockstars Minute. How many times have you done this to yourself? You thought you could make it happen, and you realize later on, when it's too late, you made it even worse because you didn't call in a pro. We do this in business as well, legal work, bookkeeping, even website development. Instead of trying to fix things yourself and save a few dollars, call in a pro. All too often, entrepreneurs only look at the bottom line of what something costs. Stop doing this. Remember, a professional might be expensive, an amateur could cost you a fortune. Would you take your sick child to an amateur? No. Would you have your house built by an amateur? No. Don't settle for subpar. Always get a professional. It'll pay off in the long run. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free. No credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's R-A-N-K to 79645.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. In 2016, Mayo Clinic received funding to serve as the biobank for the All of Us Research Program Biobank. The program aims to collect biological samples, genetic data, and lifestyle information from more than a million volunteers to help develop more precise treatments for diseases.
There will be the collection at the time that people sign up, but then there'll be additional collections over time because it'll be the longitudinal changes in biomarkers and other things that will be interesting.
National Institutes for Health Deputy Director for Science Outreach and Policy, Dr. Kathy Hudson, is leading the charge.
If you have samples from people, electronic medical records, and their own information for many years, and then they develop a disease, you'll really be able to detect what are the early molecular and chemical changes that are happening in those people that later result in the onset of disease.
The initiative is slated to launch later this spring. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Vivian Williams.
Business rock stars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My two guests today at the CEO Roundtable are, who are you and what do you do? I want to hear the elevator pitch.
Sure. My name is Felina Hansen. I'm the founder of Hera Hub, a shared workspace and business accelerator for female entrepreneurs.
My name is Tony Del Mercado. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Hawk Media. We're a digital marketing agency, predominantly CMO and outsourced digital marketing team.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you both here. And I'm really excited to just kind of share some of our best practices and some of the do's and don'ts of being a CEO and the ups and the downs. So let's start with failures. I think it's fun to talk about successes and achievements, but what we can all relate to as people, regardless of being an entrepreneur, is failing and making mistakes. So I'm really curious to hear from the two of you, what has been, and I have a big list myself, so I'm sure it's not easy to pick from, but what has been a mistake or a failure that you'd like to share right now, but one that more importantly had a big lesson?
I think for me, it was really the expansion of my business and choosing a path. I initially started down the franchise path and realized it wasn't a fit for the market and what we were doing. So we pivoted recently to a licensing model, and that has really worked for our business much better. But it was a painful mistake, a very expensive one, and a two-year process. So okay. I learned a lot.
What about for you?
I would say the biggest error that we made was in hiring people that were incredibly skilled and we fell in love with their expertise as opposed to their culture fit or the way that they aligned with sort of our business objectives. It only happened a handful of times before, thankfully, we learned our lesson. But we hired some people that were incredibly gifted, incredibly skilled, but just didn't mesh with our mantra and sort of our core values. And that was a lesson hard learned, but I think we've corrected well from it.
I think that's the perfect thing of what you just said was hiring people that are incredibly talented, but they're not the right fit for the company culture. And so we all know, having our own businesses now, or hopefully we know, that company culture is what's going to allow our business and our people to thrive. And without our business and our people thriving, we're probably gonna have to close the doors at some point. So company culture is something that not a lot of business owners talk about. You maybe hear it from people like Tony Hsieh, who has a best-selling book about it. But at the end of the day, company culture is what really separates a company that's gonna be around for a long time and a company that's maybe just short-term success. So what are some best practices that you guys have for creating a thriving, abundant company culture?
Yeah, I'll jump in.
You jump in. You're the one that spawned this.
I won't curse on your show, but I will say we have a tripartite mission or a set of values at Hawk Media. First and foremost, get stuff done. Get stuff done. Learn quickly and be cool, right? And be cool can mean a lot of things. You know, how are you when things are overdue? How do you interact with a teammate when maybe you're under the gun? How do you relate to a client that might be ultra demanding and those kinds of things? But as long as you can get things done, you can learn things quickly, and you can be calm under pressure and cool and communicative and empathetic in that relationship with whomever it is. Those are biggies for us. That's at least our foundation.
And I love that because it's that easy. It's just going through. These are the three things that we stand for. It could be a huge list. It could not be. But you guys got it right there. It's three. It's simple things. You guys have probably this type of casual kind of laid back.
We do.
Right?
It's because
as long as you're in alignment with those three values, you're getting stuff done. Right? You're laid back. You're chill. You're having fun. And of course, right, you're coming from a place of integrity and you love what you do. What are some things that you guys do?
So ours is learning and leading. So we very much have a learning culture at HeraHub for our staff, for our team, for our members. It's all about learning and growing, but it's also about leading. So being that example, that role model, and that's what I try to do for my team, whether that's me getting on the floor and cleaning the carpets, because I don't ask anybody to do something that I wouldn't do myself.
What is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It's fun to talk about or read articles or look online and look at these people that have these Instagram followings as an entrepreneur with a million plus followers because of their lifestyle and all this stuff. But, you know, maybe it's even the people that sell their app for $1 billion after a year. But the reality of it is the 99.999% of entrepreneurs are not living that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That's not the reality of it. So, you know, it's not easy to be an entrepreneur. So I'm just curious from you guys' perspective, you know, what do you think is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur? It could be a list. It doesn't have to be one.
Sure,
thing.
Yeah. No, I mean,
first thing that comes to
there's
mind.
There's a lot of stuff, right? I mean, the first and foremost, the accountability, right? Just knowing that every single thing that walks out your door or everything that's attached to your name is attached to your company. And it's a very, I think, ineffective and weak leader that points down the line as opposed to taking accountability for those things. And that's not something people sign up for when it's one or two or even five or 10 people in a shop. But once you have 50 or 100 or 500 people on the payroll, to really take accountability for everything that happens, I think that's a big ask. And it's really hard, right? And being willing to put in the hours and make some sacrifices to execute on those things is... It's not something that you see when you're just on your own kind of slogging along through the trenches. But once you have a staff, there's also a responsibility, not just an accountability for the output, but a responsibility to, in our case, there's 60 people that I owe a paycheck to a couple times a month. And I don't take that lightly. I mean, that's something that it weighs on me when I go home and when I move through my life. And if I'm not executing at a high level, I know that I'm jeopardizing not just my own livelihood, but also that of a bunch of other people. So yeah. I think just the stress, and it takes a certain kind of personality to be able to shoulder that. But that's probably the biggest one. It's just the accountability. The buck stops here, and being ultimately responsible is a big one.
And sometimes you don't have people holding you accountable because maybe it's just you. Maybe you don't have accountability partners, which everyone hopefully does. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think accountability is a huge one because whether you're starting your own business and you're responsible for everything, or whether you are growing a business, you're still responsible for everything, but now you're also responsible for everyone. Mm-hmm. And the bigger your company gets, really, I don't want to make a metaphor of like the bigger the burden gets or the bigger the weight on your shoulders is, because that's a bad way to look at it. Especially if you delegate and you learn how to adjust. But yeah, the accountability is definitely one of the things that is not easy to be an entrepreneur. Not a lot of people want to raise their hand and be like, yes, please, more responsibility. Give me more work. Give me more responsibility.
And wearing so many hats, especially as you start off in your business. You may be the best attorney in the world, but until you have the budget to hire a marketing person, guess who's doing the marketing? Guess who's doing the accounting? Guess who's setting up, you know, the email management system and things of that nature? And so I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize how much work really goes into building a business.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys. CEO Roundtable is complete.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.